Hello and welcome to
2 o'clock with Keller.
Bring your tea
and leave with more.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome. Welcome to a very, very exciting episode that also happens to be 100.
We made it to 100. Woo!
So cheering, applause. This is very exciting. And we thought it would only be right to celebrate our 100th episode with some very special, fun people. So we've invited George, Kira, and Ella to come and join us. And this is Kira's first time on the podcast as well, which I can't believe.
Woo!
Yay!
So welcome, girls.
Hey, thanks for having us. Hello.
Yeah, thanks for coming, guys.
Thanks for inviting us.
This is very exciting. And we thought, we've done a few kind of book clubs before, so we thought we'll celebrate the other half of what we talk about on the podcast a lot. So we're doing a bit of a film club, which is very exciting. And hopefully we'll be able to bring up some films that we haven't really spoken about much before. Yeah.
Did you find it difficult to plan the art? Because I didn't realise until I put the list together, we've actually spoken about so many movies.
I know. Cause
I just don't have any left to talk about.
I know. I think I managed to find some. I'm not sure if there's any overlap. There might be a tiny bit, but I've tried so hard to come up with films that I maybe haven't mentioned.
Yeah.
But it is difficult because we've talked so much. I mean, we've talked for 100 episodes worth of stuff, so.
Yeah. Should we start off with everyone's favourite movies? But we've already spoken about all our favourite films, so us two can just...
So
by pass. We'll just make George start because she's like got the energy. Do you know what I mean?
Thanks so much.
You're
well, my favorite movie ever. What an impossible question. Really rude question to start with because, like, oh my god, had to wrap my brains on my flight yesterday. But because you can have a favorite film of per genre, you know. However, I decided to go with the film that I think I rewatched a lot, continually enjoyed, and my enjoyment for it has grown with each watch, which I felt like was quite good criteria. I have gone
so
with
much.
Skyfall,
the James
Bond, which I remember Kerry hated when she watched it.
Look, can I just tell you something? Like, I don't want to be rude, but like that actually isn't your favourite film. But genuinely, like, if you gave me 10 guesses, I wouldn't have said that.
What would you have said?
Well, I thought it might be like, I guess Loki's not a movie, but maybe like Ragnarok, or I thought maybe you say like History Boys or like Call Me By Your Name. You really love Rocket Man as well.
Yeah, but Rocket Man was on the list, so. I was encouraged not to discuss it.
Well, you could if you wanted to.
That was mainly for Kerry and I.
Yeah, but
no, but you know what? Let me defend Skyfall.
No, do, because Skyfall is a top-notch choice.
So, it's one of the best Bond movies. Probably the best Bond movies. It has an elite score, which is composed by the same person that did 1917 and the Nemo's Egg from Nemo.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
He also did The Best Marigold Hotel, which, oh, what a film. You've got a cast that slaps. You've got Judi Dench, Daniel Craig, Ben Whishaw, Ralph Fiennes, the guy, I forget his name, but he's Rory Kinnear, Naomi Harris. Naomi Harris slaps so hard as Miss Moneypenny. The plot, like, constantly moves on. The pacing is so good. You've got this emotional layering that's so deep. Like, the action scenes, I just think all round, I just think it's a great film, and I've always enjoyed it. So, in the impossible question that is, favorite movie ever? I'm going Skyfall. And that's my piece for Skyfall.
Yeah. Okay. That's very good. I appreciate
I shall now mute myself.
Anyway, Kira, would you like to share your favourite film with us?
I would love to. For this, I found It was both really easy to pick my favorite film, but also really hard because, like, thinking about the other questions that we might talk about later, I was like, but it could be, it's like got the best score. I watch it all the time. But I went with Howl's Moving Castle because
Ooh.
I just love it. It's such like a lovely comfort film, but I love the plot and the characters, and I'm in love with Howl, and I just want to be best friends with Calcifer, the little fire.
Yeah.
And I bought a pin badge recently of him that I'm going to put on my work lanyard, because I love him. And it's just such like a like I listen to the soundtrack. It's so soothing for like bedtime, and it's just such a sweet vibe. I love it so much. It's chef's kiss.
You,
The
that's
highest
it, that
form of praise.
soundtrack slaps. See, because
It's so lovely.
I watched it once in my life, and I really enjoyed it. But I also, because it's so beautiful, it's so beautifully animated and stuff like that as well. I love all of. I can't remember what's the director's name. Do you know?
Ooh,
He
I
animated.
don't off the top of my head.
Yeah, he's really cool. But I it kind of I didn't understand it the first time round, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
Literally.
apparently there's a book. It's based on a book, apparently. So that's like, I'm gonna read it. It's on my Christmas list, and I'm gonna read it because apparently it's wild compared to the film.
Get Christmas lists.
That's a good choice. I have to say, it's one of the few films that I've never seen. And I feel
I
like
haven't.
I increasingly hear it mentioned.
So
I really need
good.
to watch it because I've listened to bits of the soundtrack before.
But then you're not a massive animated-y movie person, are you?
No, I'm not. It's not the sort of thing I gravitate
I
towards.
feel like I didn't know this about you, and I feel mildly distressed about this
Oh, sorry.
information.
But I'm with it getting such a high recommendation from you, I'm definitely going to add it to my list and
Please
watch it
do. Oh my
before the end
God.
of the year.
It just warms my heart.
Oh, that's what you want, isn't it?
What actually
Exactly.
is it about?
So,
The
there's this girl who she's a hat maker, and she lives in like this village or town, and there's war, and she gets seen with a wizard called Howl and gets cursed, and then she goes on a mission to try and break the curse, but she can't talk about the curse or explain it. And she goes and lives with Howl. And his apprentice and his animated fire, and their castle moves. So, yeah, there's a witch called the Witch of the Wasteland. I don't know if it's Wicked Witch of the Wasteland, but she's the one who cursed her, and it's this whole thing about trying to get her curse broken. And then I just they've everyone's in love, and I love it.
Oh, no,
I love
that's
it so
really cute.
much. Wholesome, but like scary a little bit as well. Like, if you're a child watching it, like it's a little bit intense when like Howl can turn into a big bird thing, and it's a bit scary. But
Oh.
as an adult, you know, I'm like, I love that man. So
That
don't know what to say.
man loves
Very
himself as
exciting.
well.
True. That is true. He's very
Yeah.
vain.
Ella, what is your favorite film?
That's such a good question. I have the same amount of anger about the question as Georgina did,
Thank
and
you.
yeah.
You're welcome.
I'm the one that wrote the question, so just know you're directing that anger at me.
I'm
Well,
absolutely fine with that.
send a lot of love as well. It's like a passionate love anger tango thing. So,
Okay.
okay. So, controversially, the movie I've picked, I've only ever seen once, but I can just feel this obsession growing about it. Okay. Because even as I was like re remembering all the re like I don't know the stuff I'd seen, I was doing some research before the podcast, and I was like, "Wow, it's just cool." And it's Across the Spider-Verse, the most recent to this podcast episode animated Spider-Man movies, and it's just really cool. What do I have to say? So I there's. Bold, right, to pick a movie you've only watched once in cinema. But My favorite film, like when I was 14, used to be also The Amazing Spider-Man. And then I also really enjoyed the new Tom Holland ones. I think there's something about the formula that just scratches a little itch in my brain and kind of the world's brain, you know? That's why it keeps getting rebooted so much.
And we can thank Tobey Maguire for him being the original Spider-Man.
Yes, you're right. I did not even see him, but I understand your views on the matter.
Don't think I've ever expressed those on the podcast before.
Oh.
So glad that we're bringing up new things to like. Your lack of love of animated movies, your love of Tobey Maguire.
A whole new person being revealed in this 100th episode.
I honestly think that's true.
Why do you prefer the second one to the first one?
I think it does a better job of what the first one set out to do. So, one of the things I love, so A, I'm like a big kind of I love animated films. I love superhero films, and it does a great job, all that stuff. But also, I love, and it's so entertaining. Like the fight scenes are choreographed so amazingly. Like there's this one scene in the middle that says that's ages, and it's like these bunch of like 1,200,000 spider people all fighting each other because it's like a multi-dimensional thing. Anyway, and apparently it took them the entire length of the production process to do this one scene, like from the start to finish. It was like the longest scene to do. Anyway, it's really cool. But also I just love the diversity into it. I can really relax into like watching a film, and I know that they've really tried hard, properly hard, to create something that's suitable to the times. Not sure it's perfect. Nothing is perfect, especially not like a film that's catered to like the popular masses, but it's just really cool. Obviously, Miles Morales is like the first canonized biracial Spider-Man. And also the whole point of the movie is that I was just watching an interview with two producers, and they are just determined to prove that anyone can be Spider-Man. That's the whole point. So in the first one, essentially the main Peter Parker dies, and then Miles Morales gets bitten by another dimension spider and, you know, becomes the new Spider-Man. Anyway, and it just does an even better job in this one. There's an entire, like, I don't know, 10 minutes, 20 minutes at the start where it's Gwen Stacy's point of view. So like she's not just like a, yeah, like a side character. She's a real, like, developed good character in the film. There's also, for example, there's a really cool scene in Mumbatan, which is like the Indian version of Manhattan with like an Indian version of Peter Parker. And basically, the producers finished the entire scene and then got an email from all the Indian animators working on the project being like, you've not really hit the mark here. And they made a collective of all the Indian and American Indian animators on the staff, on the staff for the film. And they basically redid the entire scene with their input. And I was like, cool, I enjoyed
Good.
it. So, and it's just a good superhero movie, you know? So there you go. That's my final thoughts on it.
That's
And
good.
I can feel myself about to like rewatch it 100 times. Oh.
I enjoyed that insight
Yeah.
into. Well, I was just saying that I didn't like. Well, I liked Into the Spot Across the Spider-Verse the first time I watched it, but I wasn't like that mad about it. And then I watched it second time in a cinema, like a week and a half later, and then it was like a totally different film.
That's so interesting, especially if you didn't know that it was going to be like a two-part thing.
I did not know it was going to be a two-parter,
Yeah,
and I was so
neither.
underwhelmed at the end when I first saw it because
Yeah.
it all like it really built up, and then it was like, lol, finished.
That is
annoying.
So then seeing it again, knowing that, I was like, okay, yes,
I can do this.
Do this better.
Mm-hmm. Well, if it makes you feel any better for not liking my film that much, I hate James Bond so much.
Well, yeah, I did think that my answer wasn't going to be popular with you. I would just like to say I do enjoy Across the Spider-Verse now. I just didn't the first time.
Okay, I'm not taking back my mean comments though. So
no, I wouldn't expect you to.
Thank you.
Wow. 100 episodes, we've decided friendship's over. This is the end.
It was enough. Violence.
It was enough.
I was not expecting this. Anyway, to go from violence to the very opposite violence, because as Kenny knows, I love trying to do little segues.
Yeah, you're really good at them.
Podcast. We'd love to know. I mean, Kerry and I are joining in on this as well, so I'll aim it at Kerry first.
Mm. Oh, okay.
And then the rest. What is your go-to comfort film?
Right, let me see. It's so annoying because we've spoken about all of my comfort films, but I decided Trolls. We've not spoken about that. That is such a comfort film. And do you know what's even more of a comfort film? The second one. It's slapped so hard. And I'm not afraid to say that I'm so excited for the third one. I don't know if it's out yet. I don't think so, but I will be going to the cinema to see it. I can't lie. It's just so, like, oh, it's just so cute. It's just so, like, there's a little glitter baby in it. And it's a little disco ball. And it's just really funny. And I feel like it's not really for kids, to be honest. Like, not that that would be an issue if it was. But it just makes me want to cry because it's just a happy film and it's still sparkly and pink and yellow, and the music, like Can't Stop the Feeling, one of my favorite songs, and then they're spinning around on their roller skates singing True Colors and everything. Like, oh wait, have you got, how do you guys feel about it? Have you seen it?
I enjoyed it when I watched it.
When I made you.
Yeah, but it wasn't torturous. I enjoyed it.
Oh, good.
See, I dismissed it. I haven't watched it. I dismissed it as one of those kids' films that actually is just for kids. Because I do not shy away from a kids' movie or TV show.
Mm.
But I don't know, when I watched the trailers, I was like, well, that isn't up to snuff. But clearly, I should watch it.
Well, I think you should.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
It is funny. Like, the main, like, not troll, but what are they called? Do they have the big trolls in it that eat the little trolls, but they're different species? Oh, but anyway, one of them, Bridget, she's so cute, and she is really in love with another one of them, and he's really horrible and ugly. But then she gets all dolled up by the troll to give her a makeover and her long hair, and then they fall in love, and it's so cute. And it's their wedding in the third one.
Wow.
I love seeing how happy this makes you.
She's crying over him and it's so funny. It's just relatable. It's all the crushes and stuff. Please watch it.
Okay.
Yeah, it will dry your tears.
I don't dry my tears.
Well, because talk about comfort films, like if you're watching it for comfort.
I understand.
Yeah. Ella, do you want to go next? Because you haven't gone yet.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. That last comment kind of threw me off for a second then, because I was thinking of the film that I've chosen. I'm like, oh, is it a comfort film? Because sometimes, even though it's not a sad film, sometimes it can make you feel a little bit sad. But actually, no, it doesn't. So it's okay. I'm just overthinking anyway. Rambling. The film that I've chosen that I haven't spoken about before, I was trying to think of ones that I hadn't. And I was trying to think of ones I've watched recently. Like, just kind of gone to out of like comfort of wanting to watch something and just know I'd enjoy it and feel a bit nicer. So I picked Crazy Stupid Love.
Cute.
I think it's an absolute iconic film. I think it's great. It feels like it has a bit of everything without it being sad, because I think a lot of maybe comfort films that I go to are ones that make me cry to like the purge emotions kind of comfort films.
Mm.
But this one doesn't. But it still leaves me very happy. And I love it a lot. And it helps that it's got Ryan Gosling in it. Paired with Emma Stone. That entire, like, middle bit with the two of them. Love it. Love
Wait,
it.
But they've done another movie together other than La La Land.
Yes, yeah. They even did before La La Land. Have you not seen Crazy Stupid Love?
No. I've been trying to react to it. Wow, yes, I believe.
You're just shaking your heads. How? Okay, you guys need to watch this ASAP. It's on Netflix. Steve Carell is in it.
And Julianne Moore.
And Julianne Moore. So they're going through a separation. And then you've got Emma Stone. You've got Joey King as like a 10-year-old. Whoever plays the brother.
Mm-hmm.
And Jessica. I don't know who plays Jessica, but whatever. And it's just so good. Absolutely love it, because you've got Ryan Gosling trying to help Steve Carell like find himself and get over his separation and his divorce.
Wait, I have seen it. This is the one, Steve Carell. I was just like, who is that? Is that the one from The Office?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have seen it. It is good. And you know what's really irritating?
What?
I saw it with you and you spoiled the she's his daughter thing.
Did I?
Who's her daughter?
No, you spoiled it again. Spoiler.
That's
I did not, because as I was most recently watching it, I was watching it with my dad who's never seen it before. And I didn't spoil it.
Mm.
I mean, it's not a massive spoiler, but it's one of those at that end, that last scene where it's kind of everything's being revealed. Mm. It's quite funny.
And yeah,
like catfight.
Sorry guys.
But still would highly recommend it. Yeah,
is it Christmassy at all, or is it a summer one?
No.
It's set kind of in no time of the year.
I think it's a bit more summery because they're in the garden.
Yeah, and like it is kind of summer because the end scene is like a 12th grade graduation. So it's like the end of the school year. But I think it takes place over a whole calendar year. Mm. But it's not really Christmassy at any point.
Oh, I just say, Ella, the dirty dancing scene. Go on!
She made a face for those that can't see her.
I made a face. The kind of faces Carrie and I were making on our Emily Henry episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Really sweet. It's, yeah, great ensemble film. I'm going to stop rambling now and let George tell us about her comfort film.
Comfort film. Well, I didn't actually have to think that long about this film because I have, like, well, particularly TV shows are like my comfort things. But I don't, if I'm sad, I'm not like, oh, I'll put a comfort thing on. I just like exist in comfort films and shows 24/7. I just I the reassuring that. Feeling of knowing every line of dialogue before they say. But the comfort film I've gone for is The Adventures of Tintin, Secret of the Unicorn. Because I do love an animation. Mm-hmm. And this is an example of an animation that's points where you think that it's real, like the animation is so well done, and because it's motion capture you get like a lot of personality with it, and the voice acting on it like across all the characters is so good, and you've got so many like good people narrating voice acting, and the plot's really fun. It's like it's got a bit of edge that it's not too like pedestrian child animation, but it's not like, you know, it's not heavy, like I'm not going to start sobbing.
Mm.
And it has a dog companion, which is ultimate comfort as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely like, it's one of those films, you know, if you see it's on TV and you can't just like click past it, like whatever plans you had before, you're like, no, it's going on. Like whatever point that it's on, like it might be three quarters of the way through, 5 minutes in, 50 minutes from the end, and I'm like, yes, watching it.
I reckon it's one of those films that's on Christmas Day quite a lot. You know, it's pictured in your radio time.
Oh, yeah.
So that
I'm
that
still waiting for the sequel.
Oh.
Apparently it is happening. It was still happening, but Peter Jackson is a busy man, but not as busy as he used to be, I feel.
With an eyebrow raise.
Yeah. But yeah, for the listeners, that my eyebrows were raised. And little shout out for Jamie Bell being the best Tintin king.
Oh, he's yeah. Tintin, is he?
Yeah.
That's exciting.
And then you have Simon Pegg and Nick Frost as Thompson and Thompson. So we love those as a little duo.
Have I seen this movie?
Yeah, I forced you to watch it.
Is this the one where he's like behind the scenes and it's all these green screens and
as the film has a behind the scenes or like behind
but were we watching it on YouTube and it was like they were bobbing around.
Oh, they had like black suits on with like the capture things.
Yeah.
And they were on like table and chairs, but it's like all made out of the capture stuff.
Oh my god, I remember this now. Yeah.
Clearly left a really good impression. It's not the actual film that Kerry can remember, it's the behind the scenes.
Where do they go in the film?
They go to Morocco. You know, they're on the boat, the Caribou Jean.
They're on a boat.
Yeah, they're on a boat. And then
Is the boat driver really drunk?
Well, the Captain Haddock's really drunk.
Yeah.
And he's Scottish and he's like, blistering blue barnacle.
Oh, yeah, I know this movie. Yeah.
I'm glad it left such an impression on you. But I shall pass it to Kira.
Okay. I did struggle again with this one just because, like, there was a few different films I'd go to. But the one that I have picked is Pitch Perfect, the first Pitch Perfect film.
Yeah, cute.
Because I just love it. It's the songs and the plot. And I think looking back, like watching it now, it makes me think of like first year freshers. And it's like such a nice like, oh, remember what it does make me think about like who would I have been if I joined an acapella society at uni in first year? Would I know you guys? Would I be a different person? And yeah, I think it's a good film that you know what like the plot is very basic, but in a good way of like, you know, there are some predictable things that happen, but that's okay. That's why it's a comfort film, because you feel comfortable with knowing what's going to happen. And I think also, if you do cry a little bit at the end, that's okay. Even though it's like, it's not really emotional, but it is a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, and who doesn't love a good, like, musical or some catchy songs, mashups,
exactly,
that you can listen to outside of the movie?
Yeah.
That is a really good one.
What's your favourite mashup in it?
Oh, I really enjoy the first Bard and Bella's, but yeah, that's what they're called, isn't it? But Bard and Bella's, their first song, like when they, because when I was younger and first watched it, I did try and learn the routine. I won't lie, I'll admit to that.
Do you remember it?
No, I had to think about it then because I was like, do I? And then I don't. And if I did, I don't. I've admitted this as much as I'm comfortable with admitting.
I'm going to ask you to teach me.
No, we can relearn it together, but I don't know it.
Okay.
But I wish I did, you know. I spent so much time as a child trying to learn it. But it's one of those films where I'm like, I wish I could sing and like be good with music and just be like, yeah, I don't know that many good songs. And there are people in this call who know many songs and can just whip one out with a word, but I can't do that. And it just frustrates me a little bit.
Mm. The fantasy of being competent at something, like really good at something, you know?
So true. Yeah, and watching other people be good at stuff, I'm like, yeah, you go.
You go, girl. You
sing that.
That's a song.
Yes.
Can I just say, George's reactions the whole time is sending me.
I was talking about George for listeners out there. She knows them songs.
She does know some songs, yeah.
The thing is, you know songs, but you can't perform them in a mashup. Like, you can't do a riff off because I tried to do it with you, and you just always, you can't do it.
But maybe it's because I didn't have that pitch perfect childhood, you know. I wasn't having riff offs until I met you, and then it was an absolute nightmare because I just froze in the panic of trying to think of a. Isn't it?
No, but I was giving you easy ones.
But my brain literally empties. It's like when I'm existing normally, it's like a sink with a plug-in. And then we say, oh, should we play riff off? Someone literally violently pulls the plug out and the water just goes... And then there's nothing left except like a drip. But that's just like the half of a song that I can't remember the words to.
Wow.
It's an ordeal. I mean, it's an ordeal for you as well. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But, even talk about it now has actually given me such stress.
We can move on. We can move on.
Yeah. Oh, comfort film. Comfort film.
I thought we planned the riff off. I thought that's what we were going to do.
No. I could not agree to any sort of that thing.
Who was it who said "Let's go, girls" earlier? Because that's the beginning of Shania Twain, so we can go from that.
Okay. No.
On that note, Ella, share your comfort film with us.
I don't have much to say about it. Legally Blonde. It's Sorry. Just Legally what? Blonde. It's just good. I like it because. Okay. Also, I realised as I was writing my answers to the questions that there's a bit of a theme to them. You might see it crop up throughout the podcast, but Legally Blonde, because she's just so good at what she does, and she's also feminine. Like, I'm not sure, I'm not that clued up on the films at the time, but I reckon that's got to be fairly cutting edge for someone to be, like, good at what they do and to be feminine. I guess that was the entire point of the movie. But, you know, she's just cool. She wears so many fantastic outfits. And also, since it's been my favourite comfort film, I've started to want to be a lawyer, so that helps. I don't know, I like dresses, so there you go. It's a character that I adore and love. But also, she's all the main characters are genuinely nice. You know, apart from her gross boyfriend who you dump because he's gross. I just don't like watching films where there's any angst and it's because one person has been mean. I don't enjoy that. People shouldn't be mean, you know? And what I need from my comfort film is people to be nice to each other. And that is what Legally Blonde does for me.
That's very good. I'm very glad to hear.
Do you like the musical?
I saw the musical before I even saw the film. It was like one of the first musicals I ever saw, and I love it so much. Oh my god, you guys. Okay, that's the most get up me, but yeah.
The riff off's begun.
The riff off has begun. It was a secret surprise. I only complained so that I could spring it on you unawares.
Wow. It was really good. I really enjoyed it. I think you won the riff off.
Thank you, Kira.
Oh, so no one I would have joined in, but I didn't want to stress George out, but I was already thinking of one.
Why? What were you thinking of?
What were you thinking?
I was thinking of seeing Guys and Dolls.
You have too quick a mind.
Yeah.
Well, scary.
Episode 200, we can have a rematch. Because okay. I've already deemed Ella a winner, so...
Sorry.
I know it's your podcast,
but... Oh, you're the highest authority.
So much gravity.
Okay. I love that, we're on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, was that the end of Legally Blonde?
Yeah.
Okay, what have we got next? What film makes you cry? Ella, do you want to go?
Yeah, honestly, most films make me cry. Even if they're not sad, they make me cry.
I feel that.
Like, I cry at Dirty Dancing all the time. But that's beside the point. The film I picked is one that I don't think I've mentioned before, but it's a film that is linked to the origins of mine and George's friendship. It's not Hamlet. I picked Les Mis, because I mean, what a film that is, and what a film musical that is as well. So well done. Such an amazing cast. Absolutely turns me to mush every single time. I'm an absolute mess, but it's just so, so good. And I just love it. I don't really have much more to say apart from that.
I also picked it as my the film that makes me cry. So I might as well, with what I... It's the same as what you've said. I think the thing with Les Mis, obviously it's long, so it gives you a lot of space to focus on different characters, like emotionally. And music is such a powerful way of doing that, because you have like the instrumental, like the emotions that provided through certain like string patterns, or like even repeating like motifs of melodies. But then you also have like the way it's performed, and like Hugh Jackman, when he's performing Who Am I, like he puts like, that's not even, because it's emotional and moving, which I feel like are somewhat separate things, because you can be moved by like how beautiful a song is. Like, it might not be sad, but it's like it gives you goosebumps, and it just like transports you totally. But then also, like, it is an emotional film. Like the last section, I remember when we watched it together, we watched it together, the recording, the like anniversary recording. Was it anniversary, or was it when they did it from the theater? I can't remember.
I think it might have been the staged concert version, but I don't know if it's also for an anniversary.
Yes. So we watched the stage concert together, and then we were crying for the last, like, probably half an hour. And then they brought on, like, past Valjeans and past Javert's, and then they were all singing together. And then we were even more of a mess. And then we watched it together, like, the film. And we were just literally just laying next to each other, like, just like... little shy, gentle tears just like rolling down our cheeks. Like, we didn't like share a word. We were just like, we were just so sad.
Crying.
But like, it's a beautiful, it is a kind of beautiful ending as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my addition to your thoughts on Les Mis.
How does it end? I can't remember.
Nothing.
So Val, like, Valjean has saved Marius, who his, I don't even know what to call her, adopted daughter, falls in love with. He saves Marius from the barricades, and Marius is the only one to survive from the uprising. And then essentially Valjean's very ill, and on the wedding day, just before it, he's like, Marius, I need to leave, but this letter explains who I am, because he's never told anyone that he was formerly a convict. And then Cosette and Marius find, like, you know, she reads the letter, and then they find Valjean, and he's back at the monastery where he was basically, like, given shelter when he was on the run. And then there's like a really long 7-minute song that like incorporates loads of these songs from like the earlier songs, and like then Cosette's mum, she like Fantine, she like appears to Valjean as a ghost, because he's like the first person that she saved, and she's like, you know, there's a place for you. And then he like dies, and then he's like standing over himself watching Cosette and Marius like cry over him. And then it goes to a big barricade in the middle of Paris, and like all of the students and everything are there singing on the barricade, singing, do you hear people sing? Oh,
good. So good.
Wow, it's... that's powerful.
I watched it in the theater once with my granddad, and I just had such a strong memory of crying so hard. At the end of it, like, the curtain called down, all the members of the family, like, come back on stage, and they're the only ones dressed in white, and they're all linked. And I was there, the curtain comes down, lights come on. I was there sobbing still, my heart, and people were getting up around me. I was like, how are you? How are you alive?
How are you functioning?
I know.
It's the only film there, I've seen.
Like, looking at me like, what the fudge?
It's the only film that I've ever seen my dad cry at. And wow. cry consistently at.
Yeah.
And he printed all the lyrics off to the film. Mm. And whenever we watch it, he like lights a candle and puts it on the fireplace and everything.
Which I
think makes me cry even more. Because as soon as I see my dad crying, I'm like, oh! So... Yeah. Yeah, because then I'm also watching it and I'm thinking, oh, if my dad was watching it, he'd be crying at this bit. I could just can't escape the tears when it comes to
so many rummies.
Yeah.
Oh. Kerry, would you like to tell us what makes you cry?
Yeah,
what did I pick? Oh, yeah, I can't believe it. We've not spoken about time on here, or definitely not in depth. Which I'm sure Kat, because it's my favourite ever film. It's like, it's so up there.
Mm.
When I first ever watched it, I think I cried just when, spoiler alert, when the dad's dead and he goes back in time to, well, he knows, like, it's going to be the last time he can see him because he's going to have a baby and then he can't go back in time anymore to see him.
Mm.
And I remember just sobbing at that. But oh my God, because they just... so cute together, and then he went back to being a little boy and then they were running on the beach and having a lovely time. Obviously if your dad's dead, that's just really sad, so obviously you're gonna cry. But then it's even worse when you re-watch it, and every time I re-watched it, just as soon as Bill Nighy comes on screen, I just lose it. It's just too much. Like, even they'll just be playing ping pong and it just sets me off, because I think, oh my God, he's gonna die. And especially because Bill Nighy's not, like, his character's not super, not necessarily like in touch with his emotions, but he's not that vocal about saying, oh, I love you and that. And he's more of a jokester dad.
Mm.
It just gets me, because like, you can just tell that they really have such a good bond. And so then, obviously, he's devastated when he dies. And I'm like, oh, God. So when they're just hanging out together, I'm like, precious moments, you know? I can't, every time I just sob at that film the whole way through, but I actually love it, and it's not even a depressing film. It's just all the characters are so real in it that it just absolutely sends me.
Yeah, it's so good.
I loved it when I watched it, and I didn't.
You didn't cry.
I didn't mean I didn't feel emotional.
Yeah.
Does it though? Carry on.
No, I was going to ask if Ella cried when she watched it.
Me, Ella?
Yeah.
Every single time. And there is something about that ping pong scene. I don't know what it is. But that gets me.
Yeah.
Or even just there's so many cute moments that kind of make me, like, well up out of happiness.
Same!
Like,
yeah.
It's just so sweet. And I think you went, like, the two of them together. And then the whole, like, relationship with his dad thing, it's just, it's so, so lovely. And you feel everything that he's feeling, and the kind of, especially towards the end when he's realising he's going to have to give up, like, going back in time to see his dad
because
of his family. And that's just, gets me every single time. It's heartbreaking.
I'm going to have to rewatch it now.
Yeah, did you not cry?
Oh, I think I did cry.
Oh, okay.
But, like, in that sort of first watch, you don't know the characters, like, to the very depth of their souls kind of way, you know?
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Mm. Have you seen it, Kira?
No, I was just about to say, is it a bad time to admit? I've never seen it. But it sounds emotional, and I think cry a lot.
You're going
to
love it.
Lots of films.
I was like, this could be your favourite film this year, actually, it's going to be.
Mm. I'm going to come away from this recording with, like, just a list of stuff to watch, aren't I?
No,
same.
Oh, go on. Wait, is it your turn next, Kira?
I can go. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had two films for this one, but then when I looked deeper into it, I was like, there's a theme here. And the theme is, like, I can't deal with films that talk about, like, speaking of time travel and things, like growing older or like parental growing older. I can't do it. I will cry. So originally I had Mamma Mia written down specifically for Slipping Through My Fingers, because that every time just hearing the song, I'm like, it's enough, stop.
My god, I forgot about that.
So emotional. But I think a film that I haven't seen for ages, actually, but it does make me cry every time, is Five Children and It.
I don't know it.
So it's like I think it's set in wartime. I don't know which war. Mm-hmm. And the children get sent to like a little house in the middle of nowhere. And it's like a really cool manor house with these two, like, it's a very grumpy, it's either a housekeeper and like his, or a man and his housekeeper, or a husband and wife, I'm not sure. And they have like a beach at the bottom of the cliff. And they go down to the beach and there's like a sand monster who grants wishes, but like poorly. Mm. And there's just like such an emotional scene at the end where like they see their dad, who's a fighter pilot in the war. And it's, I don't know if it's because he's passed or if it's just like a vision, but like it's so emotional. And like the idea of like being away from your parents and being, you know, during wartime, not knowing how your family was. I can't deal with, like, and then they grow old, or they grow up and they don't see him anymore, and it's just like too much. Mm. And he's such, for an ugly little sand creature, he's so cute. Honestly, I love him. Such good film. I haven't seen Fames. And then Jacqueline Wilson wrote a sequel called Four Children in It, which is I was googling that a minute ago to see which one was the film, which one was the book.
Mm.
But it's not as good. But as like a child, I think it's a weird, like, when it first came out, it was a weird crossover of like a film that was based on a book that I'd watched. And then Jacqueline Wilson, who, like, I'm sure we've all had Jacqueline Wilson phases. Mm-hmm. She had suddenly written a book about this film that I thought like no one else had seen. So it was a fun little crossover.
That's interesting, because I've never even heard of it. So I'm excited by that recommendation.
See, so good. I feel like I remember this sand monster thing, but then it doesn't ring any other bells.
I would say it gives the same vibes as like Narnia. I think it's along the same vibes as that, of like they go into, I don't know how they get to the beach, whether they just go down to the beach or they have to go through something, but like it's an old, big old house and like weird stuff happens because they make wishes.
Yeah. I may have watched this many moons ago.
I don't know when it came out. It's an old film, I think.
It's quite old.
Oh, that's actually not as old as I thought, but that's still quite old.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's very similar. Oh. It's really similar to The Railway Children, because Ian Nesbitt wrote the original book of it as well. And it's the same thing of the dad going off to war, like spy or whatever, and then the children left behind. And there's something about her writing, well, I'm watching the film as well. I was just, oh my god, it just makes me cry as well. I'm so with you on that. I haven't seen it in ages, and now I really want to.
Yeah. It's such a good film.
Do you know what it is? It's little creature things. It's just they're just it's like with E.T.
I'm terrified of E.T. I have to be honest. Do not do that. No. But the sand monster, I love him. I understand the comparison, but like for me, I'm like, sand monster every day, E.T., go away. I rhymed.
Yeah, motto for life.
Are you good, Ella?
No, I started falling down the bed.
Oh,
thank you for your concern.
You're welcome. What's your crying film?
Okay, so if you'd have asked me like 10 years ago, I would have told you Lassie. Has anyone seen the Lassie movies? The ones with the dogs? Film. Yeah, I know. There are so many children almost dying, and the dog dies so many times. She always comes back.
It's
but my god, trauma. Yeah, do not know why they're kids films, but I have like more recent films, you know, as well. I reckon, don't know what it is about them, but any film where they've got some sort of imagined or real life journey of a superstar, a music person, there's always rocked by so much emotion. Like, for example, Rocket Man, and Bohemian Rhapsody. Bohemian Rhapsody really is the one I'd say. Cried from like halfway through that. Oh no, wait. No, never mind. Okay, those are my two extra examples. My real example is, so I had to pick between like films that made me cry like consistently, like throughout the entire film most, and the films that made me cry like the hardest. And I reckon the hardest I have ever cried at a film is when Ella made me watch.
I feel so bad for making you watch this. That it, like,
it was so funny. What was it? A Star is Born. A Star is Born. We got to the end. I didn't know that something that was going to happen. And I was shaking with like the sobs heaving out my body. I was like, my God. It was sad.
I've never seen you cry that hard in my life. And I instantly regretted suggesting that film. I think for the moment
I don't know.
I love it.
Because I wasn't even that. Because I remember during it seeing you be like crying quietly throughout most of it. And I was like, it's not that sad. What are you on about? And then all of a sudden, the end happens. And I was like, you were hit. I was hit with things.
Even just thinking about that film makes me feel like crying. Like, it makes me tear up thinking about that film.
Yeah.
Like, you just need to pause it. 40... You
haven't seen it. Don't bother. No! Kerry! Go away!
Okay, sorry, bye! Wow, episode 100 might end in a fight, actually.
Actually will. No, it's fine. We can have our opinions. It's really beautiful, I'd say. Worth watching. And I think you would enjoy it as well, George.
I like Shallow.
There you go.
I mean, me too.
Oh, yeah, that song.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
But yeah, don't watch it when you're emotionally fragile.
Noted. I think I'd rather watch Skyfall again than watch A Star Is Born again.
Oh, no.
Wow. Why? What is it that's like?
I listened to Shallow and I thought, wow, this song is amazing. Love it. Actually, I was belting out in the shower yesterday. I still loved it. But, and then it was the most boring film ever. Just nothing happened. The fact that it was building to something and then nothing, like, it didn't actually actualize. And then.
It surprises me so much coming from you.
I don't know. Like, and I don't think the other music was that good. And then. The ending was just depressing, but like I didn't care about the thing happened to enough to care.
Yeah, no, fair.
It just like it was all really like one level and it's dragged on. Sorry.
I understand to a certain extent because as I said, I was watching Ella like crying next to me and I was like, why? Why? So yeah, and I would watch it again to have like a deeper connection with the characters, I reckon. Well, there's more enjoyment to get from it, which is the opposite of what I took away from it than you did, but still, anyway.
That was very diplomatic. Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah, trust me to make people watch films that make them fall apart. Sorry about that, guys.
No, perfect.
Your genre.
You just bring emotion to our lives. I was saying the other day, sorry to continue talking, I was saying that I reckon, okay, that after my... during my diss, I don't think I cried at films nearly enough. Like, writing my dissertation, like, in my last year of university, I think I was emotionally exhausted, like, all the time. Didn't have the space for, like, those emotions. And literally... like a week or two passed after my last deadline and I could like I started crying at movies again, and it was honestly such a nice feeling. I was like felt in touch with all of my, well, my emotions, you know. It was nice. So I enjoy crying at a good film.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, same. Did we want to like each just pick one of the remaining questions and say our answer for that one?
Yeah, let's do that. And then we can do a really quick fire favourite actors.
I'll go for favourite film score. Mm-hmm. Soundtrack. Yeah. So obviously the difficult question, because mm-hmm. there are just an infinite array of incredible scores, whether that's like musical biopic scores or original music or whatever. But I went with what I've always enjoyed the most, which was the soundtrack to Spirit, Stallion of Cimarron Heard. Mm. Because we have coupled a Hans Zimmer score, which obviously are always just like god tier elite, and so it just captures such like an amazing array of feelings. And then if you know me, you know I'm a bit of a Bryan Adams gal, like a little mm-hmm. bit of Bryan Adams. So then Hans Zimmer plus a whole entire Bryan Adams album, essentially, that is like the narrative and monologue of the main character. Amazing. And it's got such range. Like, you've got the kind of like melancholic, missing home songs. You've got like the absolute, literally, like, you're already down, battered on the floor, and Brian mm-hmm. comes and like repetitively whacks you with emotions. And you're like, Brian, stop, I can't take anymore. And then he keeps going. But then like in that same song, he like gently lifts you up. And mm-hmm. it's just like, Brian, you can't do this to me. And then you've also got like the little cheeky ones that you're like, oh yeah, woo. And I just feel like Brian just captures all of that energy very well. As well as like they Hans Zimmer and Bryan Adams capture the feelings like in their respective designations very well. And you could listen to the Bryan Adams soundtrack and kind of like get the plot of the film, but then not entirely. But like I think it's quite cool that it does that, because then it is like a musical, which I love a musical, so. It's pretty cool. And I think if you haven't seen the film, you just need to watch the film, because it's just insanely good. And for like a film with very, very limited dialogue, because it's only the humans that can speak, it has to have a really good score and soundtrack to make it work. And it does. Mm-hmm. So
that's interesting. I was kind of excited to hear your take on it. I always think of you as like a good person to talk about a movie soundtrack to, about, I don't know.
The nicest compliment ever. I mean, yeah. Feel free to go to my Spotify, find my scores playlist, and in there you will find a plenty of TV and film soundtracks.
My God, I can't believe that you're using the Keller podcast to plug your Spotify.
It's playlist. 13 hours long.
Oh, so many hours.
Wow.
Yeah. Recently just added some of the low-key soundtrack to it.
cute. Mm-hmm, fair.
So I'll shut up now.
Ella, do you want to pick one?
Yeah, right. I was going to pick the what character do you relate to most question, which is interesting because when I first looked at that question, I found it, I was like, well, I don't know. They're all different for me. I'm a different person than all characters ever. So I transitioned away from movies, and I can answer what TV characters I can answer, like relate to most, because I reckon you have like a longer relationship with a lot of TV characters, if you get my
defo.
Yeah, if you know what I mean. You really see them, you see so many aspects of them and how they react to so many different situations, and you just see
Oh, just the you just see so much of the beautiful little like quirks and reactions to things, and you're like, oh. But two answers, both of which I actually am watching right now, so maybe very biased, but Lorelai from Gilmore Girls, and terrible, I can't believe I'm admitting to watching this, but Star from like a kind of kids TV show called Star versus the Forces of Evil, which is as ridiculous as it sounds, but it's really cool. Basically, what connects both of them is this really beautiful kind of whimsy, I think. There's this kind of zest for life all the time. Star is, there's such intense kind of girliness that she embodies. Like, she has such cute outfits all the time, but also like her boots are like basically monsters, essentially. Like, her, I don't know, she has cool fashion and like, but like little devil horns on her headband, because she's like kind of also just full of chaos, you know, bouncing around all the time. It's so, like, I just, that type of energy is just what I would love to embody, you know, just like whimsy and take, like, squeezing all the fun out of life possible at every moment, and also just being like a little bit chaotic as well. And then I reckon Lorelai from Gilmore Girls does a kind of similar thing, you know. She's just got a tilt to her shoulders sometimes, and like a little laughing at life all the time thing, and like put sparkles on her clothes, like just kind of a nice character to look up to. And it's been really interesting as I get older, because when I first watched it, I was like related to Rory the most all the way, because, you know, she is, especially in the first season, she's nice and kind of calm and kind of girly and pretty. But Laura, then as I've been watching it this most recent time around, Lorelai is just kind of, she's older, mature. She deals with her relationships, friendships and like romantic relationships so like maturely, and she's confident, yeah, and she just, yeah, enjoys her life. She's a cool person.
I see the Lorelai in you, and I love that. Thank you. Gilmore Girls again, iconic.
I know, what can I say?
Whenever someone says Gilmore Girls, I just think of that line from Jess where he's like, why did you drop out of Yale? Just runs on the loop in my head.
You have not gotten back there yet. You know?
Have not gotten to that point
No.
Iconic, that moment.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it again. Yeah. God, Jess, the boyfriend she should have had.
Team Jess all the way.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay, I'm done speaking now.
Kira.
Okay. I, for my favourite childhood movie, is what I'm going to go and answer. Again, I have two, and I blame it on me being a Libra and being indecisive, so don't come for me. the first one I went with, I mean, I think it would be a travesty not to include any films from the Barbie universe in favourite childhood movies. And my favourite Barbie film was Barbie in a Diamond Castle. And I think I love that film so much. Like, you know, there are bangers, like Princess and the Pauper and Rapunzel. Those are bangers, okay? I will say that. But as I said, my favourite is In a Diamond Castle, because they're just two girls living in a cottage who grow vegetables and flowers and sell them.
Oh my God.
And that is just the dream, is it not? And they're just two girlfriends, but like girlfriends, not girlfriends. But maybe they are, who knows? That's fine. And they find like a heart amulet in the river, which, first of all, they've got a river in this garden of theirs.
Prime real estate.
Exactly.
So good.
And it's a beautiful necklace, and they find this mirror, and there's a girl trapped in the mirror. Very dramatic. And
oh my God,
the songs are bangers, and it's all about like friendship and not leaving people behind. And it's just a classic Barbie film. And that is top tier childhood film. And then my other option which I couldn't not talk about as well, is Peter Pan. Mm. And that's any iteration of Peter Pan, including Hooked, the like, I don't know, sequel. Well, it's not really a sequel, but it kind of is, when Peter Pan's grown up.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's, I think Peter Pan is, it's just like a quintessential like children's film or like book as well, isn't it? But it's got animals, it's got dogs, you've got children who again are going through sort of a hard time, who get whisked away and get to fly, like come on. That's fun. And I think I also did love, there's an iteration of live action version of Peter Pan, and when I was little, or around the same age as what Peter Pan as a child would have been,
I know the film
I was in
about.
Love with Peter Pan. He's just a lovely, like,
yes, looking, all that blonde curly hair.
Yes, yes, exactly. And it just, oh, like the idea of being like whisked away to an island and like just exploring it in like childhood wonder and seeing it for the first time and being a child and having those experiences and pretending to be an adult. I think when you're a child, that sounds fun. When you're so an adult, cool. you know the truth. but yeah, I think Barbie and Peter Pan, maybe on two separate scales of childhood films, but they're just classics that I grew up on. And
the Barbie occupies that like real and fantasy crossover, like Princess and the Pauper. Like, yes, it's like a princess kingdom, but it's not necessarily like that overtly fantasy.
And I think something that we forget with the Barbie films as well is that it's Barbie in a film. So it's like weirdly fourth wall-y and like meta as well, because it's actively like, whilst it is fiction, it's like an actor actively portraying someone else. So it's a fictional character.
I wonder how they did Princess and the Pauper. That's some serious special effects there.
It was amazing. It was actually, you know how they did Tintin with the
Lindsay Lohan in Parent Trap or whatever it is.
But I think that there is something so special about Barbie, isn't there? Because there's so many of them, and I think as the more films came out, as like I got older, for example, I lost interest in them. So like there's newer ones where it's like Barbie and like a rock star or whatever it is. They're slightly newer, not super new, but those, when they change animation style, that's not my Barbie. That's not my Barbie. My Barbie is Diamond Castle.
Their arms barely move. Their hair is one block, and they are happy.
Yeah,
it's like the same vibe of what you're saying about like Legally Blonde. Like they're very feminine. Like arguably their archetype of femininity, but they do so much.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
they're so independent, and like some of them might exist within the structures of like royalty or whatever. But like Annika and Pegasus, she's like, I'm not waiting around for anyone to save this town. I'm going on my quest, and you can't stop me, man. I forgot your name of. I'm just going to search you the whole way. And then
I wonder, cause I'm a massive fan of like a lot of fantasy. I wonder if the genre, I know we just said that Barbie crosses a bridge of reality and fantasy, but I wonder if it's a genre that actually often makes space for women to go and just like do things and punch bad guys in the face, like Fairytopia, Barbie, etc. You know, just like winning at life. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and I think going back to like Diamond Castle specifically, at the end, the battle is they have to be good at playing instruments. So it's not like violence or like, I don't know, being mean to someone. It's using a talent as a team, so they all have to play like different instruments to be able to like unlock this person from the mirror. So
Pitch
it's
Perfect
like,
returns again.
Oh my god, maybe that's musical. That's just what I like, isn't it? Just musical fighting. Wow, we've learned something today.
The thing we didn't expect to find.
No, I'm like, we're all learning stuff about each other. Wow.
Yeah.
But Barbie, it's just perfection.
I wouldn't have held either of those options in like in such high regard until you were chatting about them. But yeah. Cool. You should watch Once Upon a Time. The Captain Hook is really hot.
Yes. No, I know.
If you've had a Tumblr account in that era, you have no choice but to know.
Terry, what's your final question you can ask?
Oh, my favourite childhood movie, I think, might have been The Wizard of Oz. Which it was also kind of like my least favorite, and it really scared me, and I had lots of nightmares about the Wicked Witch of the West for ages. And you know what? I looked her up not that long ago, and it actually still really freaked me out looking at her. There's just something about her. It's just really pure evil.
She's that's weird. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, really don't like that gal. But I just think it's so lovely. Like, it's such an adventure, because sometimes when I was watching the Disney princess ones, I did like them, but sometimes they don't really do much. They just find a prince, which is all right. Yeah. But I like that Dorothy actually, I always got really excited when it first went from black and white into colour, and then she was surrounded by all the munchkins, and then there was just this gorgeous fairy, and I was like, oh, well, not fairy, what is she? Good witch. And then it's got, I like how her companions are all so different, like that they weren't all just princesses. I just feel like it had a lot of personality to it, you know. And I just think the actual buildings and the architecture and that are really cool. The Emerald City, that's just such a good idea. I love that. And it just really blew my mind when she woke up and was like, whoa, like it was all a dream. What? Like,
all a dream.
Yeah.
I still remember her getting her ruby slippers. That's like seared into my memory.
Yeah. It's actually really high concept for a kid's film.
Wow. And I think I need to develop an obsession with, what's her name? The person, the main character, actress.
Oh, Judy Garland.
Yeah, I think she was a really cool person in her life, wasn't she?
She was.
Yeah.
I think for me, Wizard of Oz, the like two memories, I love Wizard of Oz. I have watched it, you know, I love it. But I think that's the first film where like I learned that like pigs were really dangerous.
What?
And that like that like they can eat people, because that's why they panic so much when he falls in the pig pen, is because they don't want him to get eaten. Because if they like smell blood, they will eat him. So that's why they're also like, quick, get him out of the pig pen. Which is, you know, that's, I was like, wow, a fact I never knew.
Carry on.
And then just that my childhood toy is called Toto. And I wasn't like a huge fan of the film when I was little, but like for some reason I was just like, Toto is a cute dog's name. So that my childhood toy that I've had since I was born is called Toto.
Did anyone ever watch that BBC programme where they had to find a new Dorothy?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Wasn't that the vibe? Such a vibe, that show. They did one for Joseph as well, which is, I think, where Lee Reed
Yeah, and didn't they do... Yeah, and wasn't there... I swear there was another one.
They did another one because Samantha Barnes won one of them. Or Barnes, whatever her name is. She won one of them. Yeah, there was three or four of them. They were good.
They're doing one now, aren't they?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
They're doing one now to find Sophie and the man's name.
Yeah, you're watching
name.
It, aren't you,
Anna? Guy. Guy number one from Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
I was reenacting One of Us then.
Oh, thank you, George. One of the interesting things about The Wizard of Oz as well is it's one of the movies that doesn't actually translate cross-culturally or cross basically any country that doesn't speak English as its first language. Because I was in Denmark, I don't know, a year ago, and I dressed up as Dorothy and no one knew who I was. And I was like, this is so weird. You know, all of my other like children's movie references. And it struck me that it was because everything else, a lot of kids' movies are animated, and you can easily put on a, you know, you can easily substitute some Danish words in there, you know, because no matter how much of the population in Denmark speaks English, they're not going, when they're four or five, they're not going to have learnt yet, you know? But yeah, and that's
you can't do it the same with The Wizard of Oz. And they were like, yeah, I don't know. I just thought that was cool. I thought about that before.
That is interesting.
Ella, do you want to choose a final one?
Yeah, I'll go for the last question, the question about a film that transports you somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, lovely.
Obviously, a lot of the initial answers were ones that I think I've spoken about before, whenever we're not talking about rom-coms or something. But I chose something that I saw quite recently, kind of just to chat about it. But I recently watched The Last Duel with Adam Driver, Matt Damon, and Jodie Comer, based on a supposedly real duel for honour back in 14th century France. And I think that film, as well as being a great film about like female empowerment and basically believing what women say are true, like
when
this bad thing happened to me, men believing it. Anyway, that's the whole thing. But it does a really good job of transporting you directly into 14th century medieval France. Costumes, the sets, the like on location stuff as well is just incredible, and just like from the get-go it's so believable, and you're like, okay, we're in medieval France and we're gonna hear this story from these three different perspectives, which is also a really cool way. The three acts are split into each of the three main characters telling their version of the story. So like it's fun seeing those kind of overlaps. But you know, I love a good horse and sword film, which is
not
a category, but it is one now. I've said it enough that it has to be real, right?
Oh, defo.
I agree, because I also like this genre, so
yeah.
But you should definitely watch it. It's very good. And it's because it's all like snowy and cold throughout the whole film as well. And
pretty.
And these big grand halls with these big fireplaces and whatever. And it's just so great and so believable. And you can just tell so much thought and effort went into creating this world.
Yeah.
So I would highly recommend.
What was it called?
The Last Duel, which is really hard to say. I find the word duel really hard to say.
There's a lot of letters there.
Yeah.
Duel.
Do they speak in French accents?
No, they don't. Some of them have semi-annoying American accents at one point. The accents are a bit all over the place, but it's one of those that, because it looks and feels so believable, you can kind of overlook the fact that they're not all talking in French accents. Very clever, because normally that would be the sort of thing that would kind of annoy you.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
And also they don't have to depend on the French accents to make it French, you know?
That's good, yeah.
Like Robert Pattinson's French accent in The King.
Oh, that was good.
So yeah. That's that one.
Cool.
Let's really, really quickly finish off with a quick fire. Favorite actor, everyone, just give a name. Carrie, give us a name.
Julia Roberts.
Good one. George.
I've got the whole list.
You can just throw a couple at us, it's fine.
Okay, I'll read these really quickly. Usuals like Benedict/Andrew/Oscar/Tom/S.
People don't know who you're on about though.
Oh, Benedict Cumberbatch, Andrew Garfield, Oscar Isaac, Tom Holland slash Tom Hiddleston, Claire Foy, Ian Decaystecker, who played Fitz in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Elizabeth McCallery, who was Polly in Peaky Blinders, Adjoa Ando, who was in Doctor Who, and she's done loads of cool Shakespeare stuff, and Sophie Okonedo are the people I've written.
Very, that's a good list. Kira,
I've got one. Sebastian Stan. Just Sebastian Stan, because I love him. That is a great answer.
Ella, throw a name.
Saoirse Ronan.
Nice.
Thank you.
And my name is Christian Bale.
Thank you. Just to go full circle back to the start, he's the voice of the English dubbed Howl in Howl's Moving Castle.
No!
I believe. Citation needed.
I mean, you'd already sold me on the film, but that sold me even more.
I'm so glad.
I'm checking for you, Kira. I'm checking. You're correct.
I knew it. I know my Howl's Moving Castle trivia.
we love a full circle moment, and that was
beautiful.
Yeah,
we're all coming away with such good film recommendations today. Thank you, Kerry and Ella, for having us.
Thank you
for choosing to spend your 100th episode with us.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you guys for coming and joining us on our 100th episode. It's been lots of fun.
So much fun.
And I think a great fun way to celebrate 100 episodes, which is kind of mad.
Congratulations. Ooh, this is a party popper going off. The glitter's everywhere.
Should have done this on the 5th of November. Bye. So you'd have had fireworks.
Oh no.
Thank you all again, and you might be joining us for this week's extra brew episode as well, so ears peeled.
Drama.
Thanks for listening to Tea O'Clock with Keller.
Join us next time for more.